Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations as well as our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and visit our Facebook page, Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And if you'd like to get a comment or suggestion to me, just drop it to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. And you can leave a voicemail message actually on the homepage of the website. There's a little voicemail icon conveniently located on the right-hand side of the homepage, and it's always cool to get them. So we invite you to do that as well. So given the season of the year, it is a pleasure to welcome to the microphone for today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, Cantor Elisa Pomerantz-Boro, who is the Chazan, the cantor at Bethel, one of our congregations here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, where we are recording from. So, Elisa, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
So, this is the season of the year where so many people really get into some of the music, the high holiday music, the changes. When do you start your preparation for the high holidays?
I'm always preparing for the high holidays.
Really?
Yeah, I am. I'm always thinking about ways to engage people spiritually and to lift them up. And the high holidays are, of course, the time when the most congregants come and we see the most of our people. Mm-hmm. But every touch point, any time during the year, is also pivotal and critical. So anytime you're reaching somebody during the year, potentially they're going to be more impacted on the high holidays, mm-hmm. and more engaged.
We've noticed at least in the Reform movement where I, you know, the ballpark that I play in, or I was raised with, over the course of my rabbinate, and I got out of HUC in 72, so it's 40-some years, major transitions within the community, a real significant sea change within synagogue music. Talk to me about, if you can, what have you seen? You were ordained, invested when?
In 1991.
Okay.
Back then, it was very unusual for females to become cantors. And I was in the first group of 14 women in the whole country to become conservative cantors. Now, of course, there are female cantors all over, mm-hmm. All over our community and all over the world. The conservative movement is a little different in that we hold on to tradition so much, and that Nusach, which is, you know, we believe strongly in Nusach and keeping that, the traditional, quote unquote, music of our liturgy, and keeping that, preserving that, and yet being aware that in today's day and age, people don't have the zitzfleisch, they don't have the patience to sit through hours and hours of cantorial, per se, music, mm-hmm. and sitting listening to that. So I try to mix it up and balance the traditional Nusach-based liturgy with putting in some contemporary settings and things that engage people in a different way. So there's humming, there's meditation, there's a lot of yadadais, and there's traditional Nusach as well. So it's hard to please all people all the time, but that's something that we try to, we can try. Yeah. And when we don't, we can say, well, we tried our best.
So is there an openness to all kinds of different types of musical modalities now in liturgy and worship services?
In my mind, there is. Okay. There's not in everybody's
good,
mind.
Good answer.
Thank
good
you
answer.
Very much. Thank you.
And
thank
a free you. Throw. Score.
Thank you very much.
Del one.
Oh, you
one.
Mentioned baseball field, and so
I. No, listen, we used to have baseball here. Also, you also alluded to something in my ordination class at HUC. Sally was in my class. So, again, my rabbinate has seen this explosion and acceptance and normalization of female clergy. So where in your experience now with the cantorate in the conservative movement, and you alluded to this, this is a done deal now, there's really no issue?
I wouldn't say that. Uh-huh. It's still a deal. It's still new for some. Mm-hmm. There are still congregations where a female clergy person would not be sought after.
Really?
How's that for politically sensitive?
That's very well done.
Yeah, thank you. few and far between, but it's still unique. I still get comments. It's not like it was 30 years ago when I would come and they'd say, have you met our new cantor? And I would be standing with my then fiance and they would shake his hand, assuming that he was the cantor. They obviously hadn't heard him sing. with all due respect to you, Stephen, if you're listening. But that has changed. But it's still new for some people. And, you know, what do you call me? And is it okay to call me by my first name when they wouldn't think about that with, you know, there's still plenty of gender discrimination.
There's a whole new survey that we actually did a podcast on this with Mary Zamor, who just published a book for the CCR Press on this about some of the income inequality between male and female clergy, rabbinic and cantorate, that still exists.
Well, it's true across the board. It's not just clergy. I mean, women, right? 76 cents on the dollar or something. Anyway, that's off topic.
Well, but relatable.
Yeah.
The Nusach, the melodies. Talk to us a little bit about for people who aren't familiar with this. We have in our tradition different settings for different days, Shabbat, and you're about to enter the High Holidays, which changes the modality of how the music is. Could you walk me through how that works? Because I know we do that all the time for Hanukkah. And go ahead.
So you should theoretically be able to walk into a synagogue anywhere in the world and know what day it is based on what you hear, right? So traditionally, you'd be able to do that if you were knowledgeable enough to do that. So you walk in, it's Shabbos Mincha, because it has a special, so Shabbos Mincha, Shabbos afternoon, it's a little bit more plaintive. It's a little bit sad because we're sad that Shabbos is ending, right? And then at the end of the service, we go back to our weekday melody to get us ready to go into the weekday mode. And then you return to the Shabbos just for a little touch to make sure that, let's keep that Shabbos feeling with us. The same thing is true of the High Holidays. They have a special kind of more majestic sounding Nusach because it's a once a year that we're coming together and it's supposed to be awesome. Awesome in the big way, like godlike. So it shouldn't sound like it sounds like every day. It should feel special. Same thing is true with different holidays, like the three festivals. There's different sounds that you should hear when you walk in. Weekday versus a Shabbat service should sound different and feel different.
The idea of borrowing, by borrowing, I mean, it's probably the wrong word, but we have melodies that are, quote, traditional melodies. So, for example, the most famous Kol Nidre. And people say, well, that's a Jewish song, But really, we borrowed a lot from the countries that we found ourselves in the diaspora and adapted, haven't we? Especially with the music.
Of course. So the thing is that music has always been affected by what's going on in the world. So a lot of High Holiday liturgy music was written around the time of the classical music period. So it was impacted by the classical music composers of the time. Same thing is true now. We hear a lot of more folky music starting with Debbie Friedman and others who were impacted by the music of the 60s and 70s. My father wrote a lot of music back in the 50s, impacted by what was going on in the world, and it continues to happen today. And so Jewish music is a byproduct of what we've heard, yet it has its origins in cantillation. So the Nusach is based on cantillation, which predates any other known music. It predates Gregorian chant. So the little trope that we use, the cantillations to read the Torah, that's the oldest form of music that is known in the world. That's pretty spectacular. Yeah. But again, music continues to change. But certain things like Kol Nidre, we call Mi-Sinai, as if it's from Sinai directly, given by God. Is it really? No, it's not really that old. It's not thousands of years old.
But you're not going to change Kol Nidre.
But we're not going to change it. Changing Kol Nidre would be like, changing Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. You're not going to change it, right? And if it's going to be performed, you're going to hope that it's going to have the integrity with which it was written.
Are you seeing a lot of new stuff being written for synagogue land?
Constantly, but it's always been that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Who's your favorite modern composer?
Oh, goodness. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm impacted by things that move me and by things that I think can move other people. So without naming specific names, I mean, I'm I'm a fan of so many artists, contemporary and traditional. And I like to improvise. So when I was in cantorial school, our professors made us learn, you know, three different standard settings of a piece and then improvise your own so that you have those kind of in the back of your head, three different distinct melodies. And then, all right, now come up with your own on the spot.
Yeah.
That's what I love. It's like jazz. It's kind of like, you know, within that musical framework, using these, motifs and these melodies and come up with something creative and unique, because why else have a professional as a cantor? You know, that's what we do. We're trying to take prayer and music and combine them into a meaningful experience, not just singing somebody else's melody. Well, that's fine, but let's make it powerful and impactful.
Right? Do you ever improvise on the pulpit?
Always.
Yeah?
Every single day.
Really?
Yeah, always.
For example? Yeah.
I mean, I'm moved by the words of the liturgy.
Okay.
And I'm impacted by what I'm feeling and sometimes by what I'm hearing, often by my own emotions. My best davening, my best prayer experiences are when I'm not aware of anything around me and I'm just communing with God.
You're in the zone, as I call it.
I'm in the zone. Yeah, I'm in the zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the power of music.
Has the role of the cantor changed in your career within the congregation setting? I mean, you're a cantor at a large suburban congregation here in southern New Jersey, probably, you know, typical of the sense of what's happening around the country. How has the role of the cantor changed?
Well, the cantor used to just be the superstar who came in and you paid the cantor all this money for the voice. But now, honestly, singing is the least part of my job. Mm-hmm. I spend more time teaching and, quite frankly, listening. I listen all day long.
Really?
I lead prayers, but I teach, I counsel, I visit people who are ill, I teach classes. People come in to counsel with me. They come in, they might be coming in to talk about Johnny's bar mitzvah,
right,
but really they want to talk about their marriage or their illness or whatever it is that's on their mind. And we need to be a conduit for them. But again, I think that music and prayer are vehicles to help us get to that place where people can feel a connection to religion and to God and to me and to the synagogue. So that's kind of cool.
So again, we're talking with Elisa Pomerantz-Boro, the Chazan, the cantor of Beth El here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You have a website, right, Elisa? What's the website in case somebody wants to, they can't get to Cherry Hill for Shabbos or Yontav, but they would really like to listen to you.
Thank you very much. Actually, the shul is now in Voorhees. We've been in Voorhees, New Jersey for 10 years. We're right across the street from Cherry Hill where we used to be located. The shul will be 100 years old in 2020. I have a personal website, ElisaPomerantzBoro.com, PomerantzBoro. There's a hyphen, but you don't need the hyphen on the web page. And I speak all over. I do concerts. I'm part of a group called Divas on the Bima. We perform around the country. It's super fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I remember we were speaking a couple of months ago after a meeting at Beth El in Voorhees. Forgive me. I get my Voorhees and Cherry Hill mixed because you just cross the street and it's another world. and you were on your way to, I think, a cantorial convention earlier in the summer. I'm interested in what, because I know what happens in some of the key things in the rabbinic convention. What were some of the issues in the cantorial convention that really rose to the top?
Well, I'm the immediate past president of the Cantors Assembly. And so our conventions are a lot of fun and a great time to be together with each other and a lot of music. But there's also a lot of talking about issues that are in our own congregations and our communities. There's a lot of talk of interfaith families. This year was very powerful because we had one of our own talking about Pittsburgh and the incident that happened there. And we presented him with a Torah cover that will be in his congregation for the High Holidays, presented from the Cantors Assembly. And that Torah cover will be traveling around the country, including at our shul, so that we can talk more about Holocaust education and and kind of what's going on in our country and in our world to try to stop it.
I'm interested in, were any of the discussions focusing on, because I know the rabbinic conventions are obsessed with this in many ways, the whole shift in affiliation vis-a-vis congregation, change in the way members, people affiliate or lack thereof with congregations.
We don't really spend too much time talking about the negative traits that are going. No, because what's the point on talking about what's wrong? Let's talk about what's good.
So do you flip that? And have you had these conversations about greater sense of outreach into the community?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's where we need to focus rather than, whoa, is me and oi, the conservative movement's dying. Let's say, what can we do to make to be better? Mm-hmm. What can we do to engage people better? How can we change our services? Do we need to change? What is the problem? Is it that people don't care about religion, or is it that they just, it's not important to them, or is it the financial realities? You know, there are a lot of issues out there, but what can we give them that they need?
What is it that we can give them that they need?
I think people need something to hold on to. I think people need faith, something to give them strength, inner strength. I think they need a sense of, we all need a sense of community, of belonging, of being heard, being appreciated, and having a place to come together to pray and to have music and prayer and inspirational words from rabbis and teachers to make us feel like we have purpose and meaning in our lives, right? Isn't that what it's all about?
Hopefully.
Yeah. I feel very strongly about the power of music. Back when I was in cantorial school, I had an internship where I would go to Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And I was assigned to the stroke unit. Mm-hmm. And I would walk in with my classmate and with my guitar. And we'd walk in, hi, how's everybody today? Nothing. Radio silence. But I'd start playing the guitar and start singing. And the patients of various ages and stages would be able to sing along. Or clap along, because the brain is such a mysterious thing. And it was very powerful and very meaningful to me about the power of music back then. Little did I know that I would have a daughter 23 years ago who suffered a massive stroke in utero. And so the power of music became ever clear, all the more so for me when she was in the incubator in the NICU for so long. And we had a little back then CD player.
Remember
with a speaker. Yeah. And played music. And back then it was a lot of Debbie Friedman, a lot of Enya, a lot of classical music. Constantly, when I couldn't be there, singing to her directly. We weren't allowed to touch her. But the music was powerful. And she exceeded any doctor, every doctor's expectations beyond reason. They said she would never walk, she would never talk, she'd be paraplegic. And my daughter's beautiful, and she speaks, and she reads Torah, and she's remarkable, miracle. And I do believe that music and prayer are a big reason why.
Well, we know from our research, because we've done a bunch of programs around here in pocket on the power of music dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's. There's been enough studies on that now that's conclusive.
Yeah, I'm a believer. Combine that with prayer, it doesn't get better than that.
in your experience, and your personal view from the Bema, what's the place right now in the 21st century of formal worship?
What do you mean by formal worship?
Coming to services on a Friday, Shabbos, you know, I'm interested. You lead services. Mm-hmm. What does that worship experience do you think, for those people?
I think it varies. What do I want it to do, or what does it do? So I look out sometimes, and Friday nights I wouldn't call formal. It's very informal. We sit in a circle, and it's for lack of better terminology, kumbaya. I mean, there are moments that we're happy clappy and singing and dancing. We're getting up, and it's amazing. It's great. It's filled with ruach. And then there are moments of transcendence that I see people. I've seen tears, a lot of eyes closed, some swaying. And then there's foot tapping, and it's all of that. It's connecting. It's feeling something deeper, bigger than yourself. And I see that happening. Shabbat morning, you know, in a conservative shul, it's a long service. So there are moments that I don't know what people are doing or thinking or daydreaming. And there are moments that they're in it. There are moments, again, we're doing Misha Berach, we're doing a healing prayer, and people are crying. And even if only three people are crying and 200 are talking, mm-hmm. I've impacted three people and I've helped them and made them feel connected. That's a gift. That's a beautiful, beautiful gift and experience. So can it impact everybody every time? Probably not. But what does? You know, you walk out of the symphony or the movie theater, did everybody love the movie? Probably not.
So you alluded to before with not only the words, but the power in a worship experience of music. Mm-hmm. And we've all been places where we've seen music literally transform a mundane, sometimes boring worship service, turn the page, read the prayer, And a particular piece of melody stops the show in many ways and transforms people.
Right.
Talk to me about what that means to you as a person who does that, as the power of music to transform people.
It's incredibly powerful. But I don't always know what's going to move somebody.
No, it's
true. Because different things move different people differently. Some people love, you know, what I think is Dvekas is really powerful, and some people have no patience for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the most powerful thing I guess I can think of is I remember after my daughter had a brain surgery shortly before her bat mitzvah, and I came back to shul, and it was very hard, and I'm facing the ark, standing on the bima, and Rabbi Krupnik said to me, "It's a shame that your voice doesn't have the ability to impact you the way that it impacts others."
Hmm.
And that was a beautiful thing that he said to me. It really touched me that I remember it. And the truth is, when I hear other people singing, when everybody's singing back to the holidays, when we're all singing together, Avinu Malkeinu, and it's powerful. Mm-hmm. You're hearing 1,000 people singing Avinu Malkeinu. That moves me. I don't know if it's impacting others, but if I make myself cry or if they make me cry, then it worked, right? It doesn't get better than that. And that's awesome.
Where else do you go for inspiration?
Wow. I'm inspired by my children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm inspired by my parents and by my rabbis. My dad's a rabbi, so he's always inspired me. My mom was a great Jewish educator, raised 4 kids and worked full time and was the Rebbetzin. And so I'm inspired by them constantly. I'm blessed to have them in my life still.
You are, yes.
I know that. I'm inspired by hearing other people's stories and watching their strength. I'm inspired by the ocean and knowing that there's a big, beautiful world that we're just a small little spectacle.
Your dad is a rabbi?
My dad's a rabbi.
What was the piece of advice when you said, "I'm going into the cantorate"?
Oh, I didn't have to say it. I think people, it's funny because people always ask me, "When did you know you'd become a cantor?" And I say, prenatally.
Yes.
I think I was born into it. I didn't choose it. It chose me.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was a cantor.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, so it's kind of
genetic.
A little genetic.
Yeah.
A lot genetic.
That's
I was
okay.
Singing and davening. As long I said before I knew my ABCs, I could sing a Bach fugue. So, you know,
must have been great at preschool.
Yeah, it was super. It was super fun. Family car trips. We all sang, you know, in 6-part harmony. It was fun. Yeah, super fun. We have an album called the Pomerance. What is it? Sing Around with the Pomerances or something. I have to remember what that's called. It's not available. It's not available, but it's super fun.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. My sister's a cantor also.
Oh, and, where?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
She's in Chicago.
Oh, okay. Very nice. So yeah. It's a whole family business.
It's a family business.
So when you get together, okay, you don't try to one up with each other, do you?
Oh, no. No. Harmony. Harmony. Harmony is a beautiful thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it works.
Favorite holiday?
Do I have to pick one?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Favorite holiday in what way?
Any way you want.
Oh, you know what? I really like Yom Kippur. people would think that's really ridiculous. Ne'ilah, the end of Yom Kippur, is actually probably my favorite time. Like, we have just, you know, we spent the month thinking about how we're going to be better approaching this holiday. And then, you know, Rosh Hashanah comes, it's our new chance, a new beginning, and we apologize to everybody and all of our friends and our family and God. And here we are, we made it. And the book of life is sealed and we're alive and we're closing the gates, and it's just awesome. And we fasted for 25 hours and, you know, my voice is tired, but somehow it comes back. Right. People say, how do you do it? And I don't know. That's make another, like, one of those miracles. I don't know. Without drinking water, I don't know. But something helps me. And I have a very special friend who has Fragile X syndrome. And he has, you know, been part of my life for my 15 plus years at Bethel. Taught him for his bar mitzvah. And he comes up and he stands with me for all of Ne'ilah. Mm-hmm. And it might be bothersome to some people, but it gives me extra kavanah, gives me extra intention, because the whole time he's so excited for Havdalah. That's what he's waiting for. He's going, Hazan, 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 the whole time in my ear. And I'm singing and I'm singing and he's going, Hazan, Hazan, Havdalah, Havdalah. And it gives me extra, like I said, extra intention, extra kavanah, because I'm focusing on the prayers, but I also know that he's there. And it just, I love
it. That's cool.
So that's my favorite.
Favorite melody.
Oy vey. Oh,
I don't
goodness.
Know that one.
My favorite melody is one that I wrote. Sorry to
don't mean
to sound immodest.
No.
And I didn't really write it. It just came to me. So it's Modim Anachnu Lach, which is my favorite prayer, mm-hmm. if you're going to ask me that. And I love it because gratitude is at the essence of who I am, living your life with gratitude. And Modim Anachnu Lach is, we give thanks, and so we have to be together in a community. Back to that, I think we have power to be together. And when Rebecca was in the hospital for several months after she was born, until she was well enough briefly to do a baby naming, I would drive to the hospital, and this melody was haunting me, and it just kept coming into my head, and I didn't know what it was, and it just kept coming and coming. And when I got up at her baby naming, I thought, oh, this melody fits to Modim Anachnu Lach. And that's what became my Modim. And the rest of it was improvised on the spot at her baby naming in front of my whole congregation in San Diego.
Cool.
And it was videotaped, and later my father transcribed it for me, and it became my Modim that I, you know, have concertized and sung it all around. It's on my album of said name, Modim. We give thanks. It's powerful to me. Ironically, Rebecca hates it. She said it, and she doesn't really understand, but she said it makes her feel sad.
Really?
When she hears it, it sounds a little melancholy to her. But there's a chorus and everybody sings along, and people that have never heard it before, they start singing with me, and it's really beautiful and powerful. Again, the power of community and being grateful.
And that's on your website.
That's on my website.
Which is?
AlisaPomerantzBorough.com. Thank you. You're a gem.
Good segue.
Thank you very much.
The power of blessing. I mean, you seem, as you people can't see, we're talking here face to face, and the I'm fascinated by the power of a blessing and what it can do to a person. And you are give blessings. I mean, you are a conduit. You are an exemplar, blessing exemplar. Talk to me about what happens not only to the when you do that, but inside, internally, when you give that blessing. You talked about with your daughter and the baby name, but you stand on the beam on a Shabbos morning for a bar mitzvah,
yeah,
and or a funeral or a wedding or something else like that. And we don't, in my opinion, we don't pay enough attention to blessings. It seems so routine now to some people, but the power of the words and the power of blessings seem to be lost. Like your opinion.
I think people do take blessings for granted often until they don't have them.
Right.
And then they appreciate them, right? Like people don't appreciate health until they don't have it, right? They don't appreciate the fact that they woke up this morning, right?
Yeah.
And they can breathe. Breathing is a blessing,
yeah,
right? We can't take a breath unless we give back, right? So it is powerful when we, you know, all the clergy, we all bless the bar mitzvah child, mm-hmm, or bat mitzvah child with their family members, siblings, parents. And there are always tears, and it's powerful. So watching them, even though it becomes rote for us as clergy, it's very powerful for them. And seeing the power in their faces makes it powerful for us. And it's a really a special moment. So I think blessings do have a lot of merit. We bless our children on Friday nights. So it's always done. My daughter was at Camp Ramah this summer, their Tikva program, their special needs program. And she, you know, even on Friday, she would call so that we could bless her over the phone.
Oh,
it's powerful. And it's something that's important, and so important that she wanted to be blessed even over the phone. So I love that.
That's why I'm interested, because the... When I teach people the Hashkivenu on like a Friday night or something, I say, here's the best, my favorite blessing on a Friday night, because it reminds you that, you know, there's no guarantee you wake up tomorrow morning.
Great.
And you're just giving thanks. Or you're asking for that Sukkot Shalom. And the first words of your mouth when you wake up is Modeh Ani.
Exactly.
Thank you, God. I got another day.
Yeah.
I got a gift.
I give out Modeh Ani cards. Modeh Ani cards. I give them out to all my bar mitzvah families, bar bat mitzvah families. It's a little card, and it has in Hebrew and in transliteration and in English. And it's in a little, like a little folded card. I said, put this on your nightstand. I said, what's the first thing you think when you wake up in the morning? And they're all, you know, it's Sunday morning, and they're there at 9 a.m. and they're all like, I had to get up and come to, you know, Hebrew school or to Talis and to fill in class on Sunday morning. So I said, so how many of you woke up this morning all bright and cheery and happy? And none of them.
Nobody.
I said, raise your hand if you got up before your alarm and you were just, you know, happy sunshine. None of them. How many of you had to be, you know, woken up, reminded by your parent or had to hit the snooze three times before you got out of bed? And of course they all said, how about let's try this. First thing when you wake up in the morning, first thought out of your head is, thank you.
Right.
First thought. So I created these placards. I said, put this on top of your phone or your alarm clock. As nobody uses alarm clocks. Your cell phone with your with your alarm on it. Put it up right there. So the first thing you see is that Modeh Ani card. So that your first thought is, thank you. And when your mom or your dad comes in to wake you up, you say, thank you, mom. I love you. I'm awake.
Put that on the cell phone. That's their next thing. Put the Modeh Ani thing on the cell phone.
Yeah, so that first can thing be the alarm.
Reach. That's exactly. Reach for the first thing.
Perfect, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'll be new.
Cantor Alisa Pomerantz-Boro Chazan here at Beth El in Voorhees. Never lived that down. Last year will kill me. New Jersey. Thank you. Thank you, Alisa. Listen, continued good luck and an easy fast.
Amen.
And Shana Tova and continued health.
Thank you. And to you, I'm really grateful. Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Just stay well and continue blessing. Continue blessing. And to all of you, thank you again for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And we again welcome your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address at JewishSacredAging.com, and invite you to visit and like our Facebook page on Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And again, just a reminder that we really do appreciate your continued support of the work. And if you'd like to continue to support the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and the Seekers of Meaning podcast, we invite you to go to the website, JewishSacredAging.com, and click on the donate icon at the top of the page. And thank you very much for doing that. Seekers of Meaning is recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Media Companies here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and produced by Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning. To all of you, Shalom.